Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Dust Brown, it's day four of Elden Ring being in this world, and already we're about to disagree. Now, we'll see how we go. This is The Wind-Up. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
We're diving in to From Software's latest masterpiece, and it is very much a masterpiece. We are largely aligned on our thoughts on Elden Ring. It is absolutely an incredible game. It's very much what we played all weekend long. I'm about 13 hours in, you're about 15 hours in. But the fascinating thing, and the thing that we're just going to sort of pick apart, is that we're always playing different games.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't find, and we're not going to do spoilers for this either. We're going to very much skirt around specifics. I think it's worth touching on some stuff because a lot of the value of this game is just seeing what you can find in this insanely detailed open world. And so we'll talk around stuff because I want to share some different things that I found. I want to talk about what you found and how you found the game. But if there's anything where it's like, no, you really need to see this for yourself, both for either of us or the people listening, we won't do specifics. Hopefully that's a nice enough way to skirt around spoilers because the world itself is the big pull. And so we're going to see how we go. Yeah, what's your opening thoughts on the old Elden Ring? And we'll get to the disagreement soon enough.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Scott, you know I was hyped for this since, you know, it was first announced. Even before it was announced, it was just a rumor that George R. R. Martin was teaming up with FromSoft to deliver a game. Going into it, obviously, the hype was astronomical. You were seeing the reviews last week because we didn't get a review copy. You know, we were just playing it fresh with everyone else. You know, the reviews are like 10 out of 10 across the board. You know, you've got this level of anticipation. So
beating
going
Tony
into
Hawk's
it.
Pro Skater 2, one of the best reviewed games of all time.
Exactly. You know, it had an insurmountable level of hype almost, but as soon as you go into it, you know, like you said, you know, I've played 15 hours, it's just immaculate is kind of the word I want to throw around because, you know, it's got its grips on me in a way that I love it when a video game just like gets in your brain. You know, it's all I want to do, all I want to play, all I want to think about.
Yeah, this will get to the crux of where we sort of differ, I think, in terms of the thing that made me go, okay, I get it, and I just want to just play it left. I don't want to do anything other than drink this game in, which is that the game opens very safely. It opens as a Dark Souls game. It opens in a small chamber. You're sort of going through a dungeon, and it takes a little beat before you get out into the open world. You do like a standard Soulsian first boss, where I just stood there. I was like, "Kill me," because I know, and then it triggered the cutscene, and then we did the actual thing. I was like, "Yeah," because it's Genichiro. It's the same thing that we always do. It's the Asylum Demon. I'm gonna get killed, and I'm just like, "Can we do the actual game now?" And so at the very beginning, I was like, "Oh my god, this is Soulsy as hell!" Like to the point where you can't even compare items that you're buying at the merchant. We've gone back to 2011. They've forgotten the advancement they did in Dark Souls 2 and 3 and everything. And so that was my initial thing. And like the AI is very basic. It's very similar as Dark Souls. And so for me, I was like, man, this is so similar. But to the point where I was like, it has to be intentional. They must be playing a card. And they want me to feel like this is Dark Souls 101 and something will come along. And so the way that this game generates stuff, it seems like open world triggers just kind of happen. You get different cutscenes based on, assumedly, how many different times you've died or which bonfires you activate. I'm going to call them bonfires and souls.
Yeah.
They're not grace points and runes. runes, like Blood Echoes and Bloodborne. They're bonfires and souls, guys. Like, you invented the Soulsian genre. Let's just nail it down. But the thing that blew it wide open for me was when you do get the horse, when you get Torrent, and you, like, in a wider sense, you start getting summons, which are like a nice little single-player equivalent of getting an actual player in to help you during a battle and stuff. But it was the Torrent stuff that made the open world really come alive, because it means you're moving way faster, the combat is way more mobile, and you feel a lot more confident taking stuff on. And it also looks incredible if you start taking on a dragon on horseback, which is one of the first moments, alongside when I fought like this big golem-looking thing that came to life, came out of a field, just stood up, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm in this now. But it was the horseback combat that was the big differentiator, and it sort of made me step back from the overall design and go, okay, there are five main areas. I think there are five, maybe six main areas in terms of the lords you need to go and take out. That's almost like five little Dark Souls games, like peppered around the open world, but inside. Do you know what it reminds me of?
Go on.
You know that Pizza Hut cheeseburger pizza?
Yes.
It's that. If that was a game.
I didn't like that.
No, me neither. No. I'm talking like the layout of it. Like,
you've got
this massive
layers.
Thing in the middle, big open world, yeah. And then you've got like little dotted around the outside cheeseburgers, but also castles. And so it was that thing where I was like, there are many Dark Soulsian levels, let's say, around the outside. Two trailer park girls, but at the same time, you can spend ages in the middle bit on horseback, you know, exploring, finding the dungeons, cooperatively summoning people in. And that was the thing where I was like, you've completely switched it. You wanted me to think that you were playing things safe, but you've actually broken it way open.
First off, I want to say that that analogy there of it being the Pizza Hut cheeseburger pizza is such a Tim Rogers-esque thing. I can picture that in one of his action button videos being like, Elden Ring.
Pizza Hut cheeseburger.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. You know, when you get Torrent and you finally realize just how big the scope of the open world is, and you have this way of getting around it so much faster than you can on foot, like the game completely changes. But it's funny because going into it, you know, having that opening stretch, which is just very classic Soulsian, like I was thinking, man, it's been a long time since I've had one of these.
You messaged me and you were like, oh, I'm loving this. I'm loving how familiar this feels. Whereas I was like, I just played Dark Souls 1 the night before, and this is exactly the same thing.
Like, mechanically, it obviously is, but it's like a genre in itself in the same way that, like, kind of Zelda is. You know, you kind of go into a new Zelda and you expect to see, you know, similar structures, similar beats, things repeating itself. And for me, Souls games are always like that. And while I loved Sekiro, that was a step kind of, like, beyond into a newer sort of version of it. Yeah. Whereas this is very much like classic Dark Souls, like you said, and I just thought, I am so pleased that I'm getting another one of these, and then it has this whole other layer on top. I think it's really telling that, you know, in our 15 hours together, we've done completely different things, we've had completely different focuses. Like, I spent all of yesterday, more or less, like 6 or 7 hours just in Stormview Castle, which is the first big kind of like dungeon, I suppose, where you're instructed to go. You know, as soon as you walk out into the open world, you see it on the hill, some guy says, go there.
That's when it feels like a Dark Souls game. Like, it feels like a traditional Dark Souls
totally.
Game.
And that's kind of what drew me, because while I've really enjoyed the open world stuff, for me it's the level of detail in those dungeons that I was just like, this is insane. Like, that Stormview Castle is so dense and so vertical that you could be on there for hours and hours just finding shortcuts, finding secrets and all that jazz, with the addition of a jump button.
Yes.
I think that changes everything. Like, there have always been shortcuts, there have always been secrets in Dark Souls games, but adding that jump in means you can get to places that you could only kind of like imagine before, and it's like the game developers know that, and they've gone mad with it. Like, there are so many hidden nooks and crannies in that castle that I was like, I might never leave it.
I honestly, the pure architectural side, like, it's one of those overlooked things in video game design that a lot of teams hire architects to build levels. Like, it needs to make, like, geographical 3D logical sense. And that was one of the things that Dark Souls always excelled at, especially in the first one, which is why Dark Souls 2 fell off, because it was like, oh, well, I'm going down an elevator and then I'm up to the sky, like, I'm, you know, I've got a cave. And it didn't really make sense in terms of an actual 3D space in Dark Souls 2. But the architecture of that castle is insane. It's one of the things that you get an art card for if you buy the fancy edition. And stuff. But the thing is with me, like, I love that space. I think the lore backs it up as well, like, knowing that it's J.R. Martin sort of did put together some custom lore for it, and finding out about, like, the Elden Ring is all shattered and all these lords that were used to rule over everything, the Great Order as it was referred to, and now they've all gone mad because it's a FromSoft game and whatever, and not knowing what you're going to find in this big insane castle, which is bolstered by the fact that it towers over this massive landscape that you've already been in. And then did you find that weird butcher thing that lives in the basement.
Like the kind of amalgamation of flesh and things that attack
all the
you.
Limbs, all the different experiments he's been doing, or it's been doing, whatever the hell that thing is. I love finding stuff like that. I was like, there's a little, that's a Bloodborne like nod almost, even though we had like crazy dudes in other Dark Souls games. But like, you know, FromSoft and Miyazaki, they're not afraid to get twisted. And I was like, this is really disturbing and messed up and gray. And it's awesome. Thing is, though, I didn't mainline that castle like until last night. I did about 11 to 12-ish hours just exploring everywhere else, because as soon as I got Torrent, and I'm playing as a samurai, we'll get to the characters in a bit, or our builds in a bit, I was like, well, I'm on horseback. I can, I feel way more formidable when I'm going up against these bigger creatures. And that's the thing that, for me, blows it wide open, is that in other Souls games, you would see something huge, like a dragon, and be like, well, I can't fight that yet because I'm one hit and I'm down. But on horseback, you now have a level of mobility, and the fact that Torrent has a double jump, you know, you can dance around bigger enemies in a way that you really couldn't beforehand, or at least you couldn't in earlier Souls games until you were way more leveled up. So immediately, my brain went to like, well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to fight that giant that I saw on the mountainside. I'm going to go back and I'm going to fight that dragon, and in a dynamic sort of sensibility, like maybe you're picking up crafting materials on the way, you're fighting other enemies and stuff. But when I took on Aguil, which is the first dragon, the ancient dragon or whatever it's called, in the starting lake. To the right of where you first open the game, that was like incredible. Like the music knows what it's doing. The score comes in. You just go into this big duel, and I was like on horseback. It was like Shadow of the Colossus style, with better combat. And I was just like, this is Elden Ring. Like this is what differentiates it from just being open world Dark Souls. Like, you know, it's very much its own thing at that point.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I think the crux of this is that we both really like the open world. We both like Torrent. It's just for me. At this moment in time, you know, 15 hours in, the thing I love about Souls games is putting together the pieces of a puzzle. Like, I almost view the level design as a jigsaw. Like, you're going into a space, and for me, the enjoyment and the reward comes from taking this impossibly large environment, this impossibly large dungeon or level, and piecing it together until I have total mastery over it. And Stormview Castle gave me that in such a pristine way that I was like, this is what I love about it. Whereas the open world stuff, while great, it's like the unknown. It's doing the exact same thing as that. You're still piecing together how the world works, how you can get shortcuts, how you can get to there and there, but it's on such a grand scale that it's almost intimidating. At least it was for me, where I can spend hours and hours getting pieces of the puzzle, but I'm not seeing the shape of it yet, which is obviously intentional, but you know, is a pure personal preference thing. And why I haven't taken to the exploration maybe like you have is because I get that in miniature with the dungeons themselves, whereas the game is so big, the open world is so, has such a massive scope that it's going to take a long time for those puzzle pieces to come together.
Well,
but
these
are exciting.
This whole thing is our very much our mentalities, where we are right now as game critics, or whatever the hell we are in this cultural space, because I need new stuff. Yeah. Like, I am sick of old stuff. And so, like, I don't, the whole 20-year nostalgia pull that Hollywood's doing, I don't care. Like, and everything, I need new things. I need reasons to exist going forward. So for me, it wasn't about, you know, treating it as another Souls. It was like, okay, what's the new stuff? Okay, it's Torrent, it's Summons, it's the open world. It's see that thing over there, see if you can get there. And it's the different mobility options that you have on Torrent that get you up onto stuff that maybe you wouldn't be able to do if you were just on foot. So I dove headfirst into that stuff. Not there's anything wrong with getting lost in it, being a Dark Souls game. But for me, I was like, I want to see what makes this thing tick. Like, you know, what have you added to this thing? And so I went off and started just pick a direction and go. And I was finding, like, different NPCs. There's this, like, rich, regal dude who's like, oh, everyone's taking over my castle. I need you to go and take care of that. So I went, and he was, oh, it's down to the south. And I went, like, through a forest. I found an overgrown sloth bear thing that killed me in, like, one hit. And then I went round him, and I went down to the castle. And I'm not really giving away specifics, but overall, a giant arrow came out of the mist and hit next to me. And so I had to navigate this, like, what even was throwing that thing, and I'm not going into what that was, but things like that where I was like, okay, you've built this game to be taken in any order, and like the waypoint system, and we should also say that there'll be audio on the channel, the audio feed, from the video that we shot this morning where we talk about what makes Elden Ring worth its Metacritic score and worth the overall hype as it is right now, but not to repeat too much of that stuff, but it is that thing of, you know, the more I deviated from the critical path, the more I just kept finding stuff, whether it was you know, like a secret boss battle, you go like down a weird chasm and then there's this thing just coming at you over and over again, and I love how they've changed the respawn, so if you die you're just there, you can just keep going. Gets rid of one of the most annoying, frustrating parts of Souls, like a corpse run and beating that thing, getting its weapon, getting its abilities, or discovering the entire underworld of the map itself, like, and then I'm not gonna go into details about that, but it's like the size of it is insane.
Yeah,
and
every
square inch of it is just meticulously detailed.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's that sense of wonder and that sense of discovery while you're out that makes the open world just such a valuable element. Because even though, like, I'm definitely with you. Like, I'm pleased this isn't just another Dark Souls. That's definitely what I want. I want something new. And when it comes to the open world, it is that kind of sense of you have no idea what's behind the next corner or what's behind this curtain. And, you know, you can might stumble into one area right at the very beginning that takes you to an end game area, you know, like in a classic Soulsian fashion.
Things trigger parts of the day as well. Like, I had a boss pop up during the night that I assume is not available during the day. It was like an area that I've been farming. There's an area that you can jump up onto and there's like seven giants all wandering around at the same time. I was like, well, I'm going to cleave through all of you because I have my horse.
Yeah.
And I slowly did that. And then I was like, cool, farming spot, and then I went back again and this thing was there that wasn't there before, and I was like, okay, I see exactly what you're doing, and we're gonna put something here so you can't keep doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's that, man. Like, that's what makes it so enjoyable to play and talk about, you know, because truthfully, like, I'm wanting to go into this game knowing as little as possible. I don't want to know anything about anything. And I know that's winding Scott up because Scott has all of these really,
I'm
really good stories.
Podcast,
and he's trying to do a podcast. Now I'm looking at him like, don't you tell me anything. Don't you tell me anything about this game. I want to experience it all for myself. And that's because it's just, I feel almost like I just want to... It's my meal, and I don't want to share it with anyone else, if that makes sense. Josh doesn't share food. These are my French fries.
Yes.
And no one's getting even the ketchup off them. but that's just like a testament to how well the game is designed and how much it gets you in that world. Because, yeah, you want to experience these things. You want to kind of like just go off the beaten path, go off the critical path, like you said, and see how the world reacts. And when it reacts in such a granular way, like you said, depending on the time of day, depending on what you've done, like, it has all of these surprises. And I can't believe that I'm only 15 hours in, and how is this going to sustain a full game? You know, this has taken way longer than any of the other From Software games so far, but you can tell, man, like, they've not wasted that time whatsoever. This was worth the wait.
Yeah, there was that whole thing about all the people who did get access to it for the review period, and they must have got given it at the start of the week, and they tried to crunch through and get the videos edited and reviewed and whatever else. And there was, on launch day, there was all the different reviewers just saying, like, well, like, I think IGN, I forget who reviewed it for IGN, but they put about 90 hours in that 1 week and managed to hit credits or whatever it was. But a lot of other people just said it's huge and it just keeps going. And one thing that you notice when you start exploring is that the open world map, you have to find map fragments to bulk out the actual sketch that you're using as the map. But that zooms out. Like, I've never seen that before. It's such a subtle way of letting you know, like, because the first time you pause and you go, well, that's a sizable map. I assume that's what it is. And the first time you're standing there on one of the precipices, one of the mountainsides, it looks like you can see the edge. It looks like you see where the cliff is. Not the case at all. Like, the more you get towards those cliffs, there's more and there's more and there's more.
Yeah.
And once you start finding those map fragments and you hit pause again, the map will have zoomed out, and the area that you start with, you realize, is 1/10 of the whole thing. I've still not mapped everything.
No.
But I'm trying to. And one place that you finally get to after you beat the second main boss, if you're following the main path, you come upon another precipice of a hill, and the game just goes, it's like flopping itself down again, just going like, oh, you thought that was but here's another entire map that is now in front of you. It's ludicrous.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I did a similar thing where obviously you get the map for the first area. And like you said, you know, when you go on the map screen, it seems limited to just that first area. You can't zoom out and like look at the fog like you can on another open world game. Here, like, you know, you just have that what you've unlocked. So I went to like the edge of the map where I thought it was the edge of the map, looking at the what do you call them, roads, like leading out, like bridges leading out, and then I couldn't believe that, hang on, it didn't end here. There was way more beyond there, because like, it's the classic sort of open world video game promise that anything that you can see here, you will go to
see
at some point.
You can die there.
Yeah, you can see that, you can die there, and you'll even go to places that you can't see, like, you know, the alternate dimensions or whatever, other places and stuff like that. And it's that, like I said, that level of discovery, that level of detail to the map design, that to me makes this like a spiritual successor to Dark Souls 1, because Dark Souls 1 I knew was a special game. I knew I was playing one of my favorites of all time when that map design clicks in and you realize everything's connected.
Oh yeah.
And I remember one place, I can't remember the exact name, but you start in like a area full of lava. You eventually make your way up to, I think it's the Tomb of the Giants, where everything's really dark. There's one point where you can look down from where you just moved from, and I thought, that is unreal. That is connecting a sense of space. These aren't just levels. These aren't just biomes. These are connected in a way that I hadn't seen before. And I've always wanted to get that feeling again. Mm-hmm. And Elden Ring gets it in a different way because the scope is so much bigger and you just think, like, you're just overwhelmed by stuff to do.
It's really weird because in that regard, this strangely feels like the sequel to Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Like, I love that everything FromSoft's done. And like, and I put hundreds of hours into these games, but there's something about Elden Ring that is so channeling the original Dark Souls. Like, it makes you reappreciate how identifiable that first installment was. Because obviously Dark Souls 2 went through the whole thing where it wasn't Hidetaka Miyazaki, it was given to like the B team ostensibly, and then he came back in and they re-released it, Scholar of the First Sin or whatever. And then Dark Souls 3 was almost like a victory lap for the series, like coming after Bloodborne and stuff. And I like Dark Souls 3, I think it plays really, really well, and I enjoyed it, but it was like Dark Souls 1 has that kind of macabre, twisted, you really don't know what's around the next corner, everything's kind of awash in like pestilence and everything's decaying, and it like it has so much of an identifiable feel that I don't think they've gone back to that much. But this feels like that. Like, even when you're in the open world, everything is falling apart. Like, even the giants have big like wounds on them, or there's like you know, pieces of the a former castle or a former ruin are just strewn everywhere. It's like this place has been lived in, things have gone wrong, and you're arriving here to you know, piece things together, become the next Elden Lord or whatever. We should talk about difficulty stuff, because I haven't died that much. I like And like, some of that is because I just know how to play a Souls game at this point. And it's weird because I wonder if it's a negative for some people that, you know, you can't just turtle around enemies. You can't just dodge back twice, go in when it's your time. They don't push you, at least in the first 15 hours, they don't push you out of that mindset. And I know it's a hard line for them to walk because it will be a lot of people's first Souls game, quote unquote. But how have you found the difficulty in it? Because I remember, I think it was launched that you tweeted like the Uncut Gems thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is how I die, or where I die. And I'm not doing a flex, even though I'm overdue a flex because of how much you've done Hades and Sifu. But I managed to beat Margit second time, and then beat Godric like the third time or whatever. I did summon for the third time for Godric, but it was still very much a group effort. But yeah, how have you found the feeling of difficulty?
It's funny because you mentioned Dark Souls 3 there being a victory lap, right? And I fully agree. Like, I really enjoyed Dark Souls 3, but if you had played Dark Souls 1, 2, Bloodborne, or whatever else they released by that time, like, you knew how to play that game. That game was not really that difficult, really, if you had it down. And I was always kind of wondering, like, how are they going to get over this? Because this formula now is so identifiable. We've had so much practice replaying and playing these games over and over again. Like, how are you going to make this challenging? And Elden Ring kind of answers that in a way. Like, I found it easier than I anticipated to find it because, like you said, you've got that muscle memory, you've got that knowledge of how to play these games.
I think because we played Sifu as well, like, you're in a mindset of like just reading enemy animation.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's it as well. But I think this kind of counteracts that. And the reason I was dying so much early on is because the way that the world is designed, it kind of takes the first kind of area of Dark Souls, you know, when you have the option to go down the catacombs.
I was just going
to
mention that. Yeah.
And you encounter the skeletons and they absolutely wreck you. Well, I did. And I was like throwing myself over and over at those skeletons for hours and hours thinking, this must be the way I have to go. I didn't find another path. And then eventually I learned the lesson of this can't be right. This can't be this hard. And then you explore. This takes that approach to the open world of you can go anywhere, but you're going to encounter some tough as nails enemies, and you kind of have to figure out and feel out where is appropriate for you where you are. So for instance, as soon as you get into the open world in Elden Ring, you can turn around and you can go down to the beach, but there's a giant there, and then you just kind of have to think, well, I'm not going to fight that dude yet with the little stick I have. Obviously, like you said, you come into the encounter that boss on the mount. Obviously, you don't have a mount at that point, so you think, well, that's off limits. And it was kind of feeling out that was the most difficult in a good way, you know, the most challenging thing, and why I kind of died so much, because, you know, you want to fight them.
You
see a giant in the distance, you're going to go, even if I am underpowered, I want to give this thing a go just to see what the crack is.
Oh, totally. Like, see what animations it has. It's a stomp animation, it's a charge animation, whatever. With the giants, obviously they have that second state where one of the things with the horse combat is that I think it both makes and breaks the game. Like, I found that I can cheese my way through every single fight on the horseback because you can always evade, you can always double jump out of there and get away. There's only been one phase of a creature that chased me down, which was really intimidating and brilliant when it happened.
Yeah.
Which was just that giant second phase where they produce the sword from their back and they do bigger, wider attacks. But they also have a move where they just sprint at you until they grab you. And even if you're circling and snaking away from them, it just gets you anyway. And I was like, that's brilliant because I need you to close me down. I need more creatures to do that. But like I said, it's almost like that almost breaks the game. But at the same time, that's what I love doing. That's the thing that I've like enjoyed the most doing, is just like running up on horseback, swiping through like seven dudes and doing Loki and Thor Ragnarok. Like, that's how it feels. Because like, in Sekiro, like the third boss or whatever it was that horseback guy. And we all know what it's like getting punked by someone on horseback in a FromSoft game or a Ninja Gaiden game or something like that. And so that power dynamic, like I said, it feeds into that idea of like giving you a little bit more. And I know that they said before launch that the game was still going to be very challenging, but they made it less stressful. And it was like a weird, like nuanced thing to pick apart that we just have to figure out as we get there. But I think I know what they mean. I think I know what Miyazaki means. And he said it would be less frustrating. It would just be more challenging. And like, I'm not frustrated with Elden Ring. When I die, I know when I die, why I died. And it's like, and you know what systems you're figuring out, and you're not corpse running for 5 minutes to get back to the place to die again.
Yeah, 100%.
They've improved those things. We should also fold in the character builds, because you want to talk about, because the character builds feel way more differentiable this time.
Yeah.
And they kind of always were, but like at the same time, I'm playing as a samurai, which means I have tons of stamina. I start with a Uchigatana and I start with a bow, and my armor's really, really good. And I think you started as a thief or something?
A prisoner.
But a prisoner.
Can I quickly go back to something you mentioned there, because I just kind of want to pick it apart. And I also think this is where this becomes an episode of The Wind Up and not just an Elden Ring love it. Because you mentioned obviously the torrent combat. And while I think, you know, torrent has a great design, love this horse with a little horns coming out of its head. And I think it feels really well to like move around with, jump around with. Like, it feels very intuitive. It's the combat itself that has been lacking in a way for me. I don't necessarily like doing the horse combat.
Really?
I think it's fine. And I think the spectacle is quite good, especially when you're fighting those big enemies, you know, like the dragon when that comes in. The music swells. Awesome. But it does feel like a bit basic and a bit boring in a way that I think the regular combat isn't. So if I do see a group of enemies, unless I kind of want to just tool on them, I'm kind of getting off my horse and sort of approaching it like that.
To throw into that pool, it's worth knowing that a lot of abilities, special abilities, the Ash of War abilities, they work on horseback.
Yeah.
So like, it depends what it is, but all the ranged ones do. You can also like throw the Kukri throwing knives and stuff. There's charge attacks, there's basic attacks. I know you know this, but like in terms of anyone listening to it, I love combining all those things together. For me, it just gets a bit gamey, but at the same, like in terms of, you know, you can glitch some fights and double jump out the way of stuff, but they know what they're doing. Like, there's a weird thing to very quickly mention that castle area. Where they need you to jump on the side of a building and like edge along the walkway and then jump off again. I'm like, that's so Souls.
Yeah.
Like, to break the level to get to the next area. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I see what you're doing. Which, to feed that back into the torrent point, I think they want you to be futzing around with all that stuff and have that push and pull of how easy it is to just cleave through a bunch of dudes. But I love the charge attack. I love that you drag your sword along the floor and then send dudes flying. Like, I'm loving love in that.
Absolutely, that does slap. Like I said, you know, it's not that I think it's bad. It's just right now, it's a bit, like you said, repetitive and almost cheesy in a way. And they definitely want you to feel powerful while on the horse. Yeah, it's definitely a farming method. But I'm kind of like, I see how you're filling this open world in a way where you get a pocket of enemies. And it's like, yeah, I can tool them for a little bit. Anyway, yeah, going back to the character creator and the character builds, that's been really fascinating. Because I'm not sure about you, but when it comes to FromSoft games, when you can create your character, for me, I always like envision a backstory for them. So me, I've gone for this little freak who...
I was going to say you referred to it as a little freak.
A little freak who... is this prisoner who has been kind of...
What's their name? Is their name Little Freak?
It's Anthelm, I think.
Okay.
I was looking through a list of names, and apparently that means like Wrath or something.
Oh, okay.
Wrath or something. And I thought it'd fit with the idea of someone potentially like coming back from the dead or like starting from the bottom and then becoming this Elden Lord. So I'm trying to spin a narrative in my own head of this prisoner kind of going from nothing with this metal cast on her head, going from there to trying to take on the Elden Lord. So that's where I am right now. But it's funny because... this build starts with like a sorcery staff. Mm. You get this magic attack really early on that's really, really powerful. Now, Scott Telford, in previous Souls games, Dark Souls games, I never, ever used magic. Magic,
really?
I could pie off. I didn't like it. I thought it felt a little bit cheesy and too easy. With this time, though, I'm embracing it a little more, and I'm mixing it in, and I like it.
The thing is, I will say the same thing. When I went through Dark Souls 1, I was just a melee. I'm nearly always just a melee tank build thing. I don't like using the big heavy weapons because you can't move around enough. Absolutely F fat rolling. I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, give me mobility. If you can give me a cartwheel, I'll take it. Like, if you can get the low enough weight thing. But same thing. I always favored melee for the longest time. My original dude in Dark Souls, I learned how to throw a fireball and that was it. And then I did a new build going straight down the mage path. And that stuff's fun. I like summoning arrows and summoning like different things and having like the greater soul arrows and things. And I wanted to do more of it in this because I was like, well, it's new technology. It's new hardware. It'll look gorgeous. But at the same time, I was like, sheer reliability. I'm going to have to be able to get through these boss fights. And I don't want to regret it 50 hours in that I can't do some cool cleaving melee thing. So I ended up, I pick a samurai because I just default to anything Japan. If I give any option, I'll take Japanese stuff. And I thought that was really cool. So my dude, it's like this like absolutely battered old warrior who's I put the age on max. Once I realized that you could milk the eyes out so they go all white, like Mortal Kombat characters, I was like, should I just make Scorpion? Like I called him Hisashi. I was going to call him Hanzo Hisashi. And then I ended up being like, and I did this sort of lore in your head thing where I was like, maybe this is what Scorpion did in between tournaments.
Right.
Like he wandered off and he got lost in the lands between and he conquered all these different things. And then I was like, it's too fan fiction-y. So like, no, I'll go back. And I kept one of the eyes milky. I gave him some scars. Looked like a 90s villain or something. But I was like, it's cool. It's like a wizened old warrior who knows what he's doing. He can fight. And it's this badass samurai. And I called him Daisuke. And I was like, that's cool. And so that's my dude. I'm just this like weird lost warrior who's like washed up on the wherever, however you get there. You
yeah.
know? But that was my approach. I always go down the give me one eye scar thing. So that was mine.
Well, this is cool, man. This is what I like about Elden Ring so much is that like it's an RPG in that sense, you know, that you can build these characters and you can kind of role play as something or at least make up a narrative in your head because, you know, there is a cool narrative at the heart of Elden Ring. There's a lot of really good lore.
Oh, yeah.
But you as a person, like that's almost like a blank slate and you can... just like project whatever you want onto that character. And I just think that really fits with how personalized this game feels. You know, we mentioned it before, like the way you go through it is entirely your own. It's so player directed. And I like that every person's Elden Ring is slightly different, not only from the character, but to their stories and what have you. And that's just kind of like the cherry on top of this experience. That's exactly it.
Well, see, the
cool
thing is, like, as I'm going through it, I'm looking forward to doing it again. Like, I want to play a mage, and I want to like flesh that whole side of things out, because one thing to throw in is that I don't know if your class affects the weapon spawns. Like, it must do, to some degree, because I don't have a single... Like, I have learned two spells as my samurai, and I don't have any way to actually use them. Like, I've talked to the cleric who...
Right,
you know, I've got
okay.
a healing spell and a fire spell, but I can't use them. And so very late last night in amongst that castle, I found this like pendant that would let me cast, but I don't have a high enough faith point because I haven't put any points into that.
Yeah.
So that's that whole thing. But like over time, I was going to say, I don't know if classes affect spawns, but I have found like two shields in 13 hours and I haven't found any staffs. I found one charm.
Right.
That will let me use, you know. But even the charm was inside one of those stone sword dungeons where you have to use a specific key to get in. So it's almost like the game is telling me like you've picked a build that isn't magic at all and you've picked a build that is more about dexterity and movement. It's not about tanking or blocking. So we're not going to spawn those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious about that. I think it helps with the differentiability of the character classes, but at some point I'd love to throw a fireball. I would love to have a heal on hand that isn't just the Estus flask or whatever the hell flask they're calling it now.
Yeah. It's funny that because I'm drowning in shields at the moment. I've got too many shields.
But you'll
Scott.
Need them if your character is more like defense lacking or whatever.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm welcoming them, but I've got too many because the good one that I'm still using and the best one, I got like second in the other five, being useless.
Because I've not found any that negate all damage. I've got, the highest I've got is like, I think 86 out of 100. So it's like okay. You're still absorbing 14% of every hit of physical damage anyway. But that thing that you could, like in Old Souls games or Bloodborne or whatever, well, yeah, Old Souls games, it was like, okay, just give me one good shield. Because like in terms of like utility, I need my block button to be a block. If I'm absorbing hits, I'm not blocking. So like, that's always my mentality. How do I find the full 100 block shield as fast as possible? And in this, you can't.
Totally. I mean, kind of like spinning off that into your previous comment about difficulty and stuff, what I like about this and between, you know, these builds, between being encouraged to, you know, go ranged or use magic or whatever, is it's kind of forcing you in a good way to unlearn the lone wolf mentality that I think a lot of like original Dark Souls players, including myself, have, where I kind of assume I have to take everything on my own and not get too good because I have something to prove. Where this is like, no, the fun is in trying different things. It's in summoning. And I like the addition to use your FP to kind of like summon in spirits. Like that's awesome. Like for the Godric fight, I found an NPC who said that they'd help me out. So I summoned them and then I also summoned my spirits alongside the fight. That's so cool. There was like me with this NPC, me with these two lads that I summoned. And we were all kind of like swarming him.
That's so cool.
And fighting him. And I was like, that's something I wouldn't usually do in one of these games. But this time around, I've been encouraged to do it. And it's been very satisfying.
Must have to address that mentality. There's something about Dark Souls that foster this idea that you have to do it all yourself because it's so brutal. And if it's a gate, test your gamer metal, it's an old school, you know, you've like Nintendo hard adjacent, you've got to beat it yourself type thing. And I slogged through all FromSoft games myself. I started summoning in Demon Souls because I didn't like Demon Souls that much, but like Dark Souls 1, did all of it myself. Ornstein and Smough, absolute torture. Like just over, oh yeah, I'll beat it myself. This one, you know, those systems exist for a reason. And I've seen the argument for, you know, the games are brutal because you're supposed to rely on others. It's literally the embodiment of the original Zelda tutorial phrase, you know, it's not safe to go alone, or it's dangerous to go alone, take this, like take these people, take these weapons, figure it out and do it together. And going through stuff together, I have like lifetime memories of like the times I've summoned people in and beating a boss collectively and everyone like emoji bowing to each other emoting to each other. And like those moments are brilliant. Like I think that's why it's built in such a way. I push back against, having lived it for 10 years, I push back against that mentality that you should do everything yourself. I think relying on others is the best thing about these games.
Totally. Like,
by a considerable margin.
I mean, I wouldn't quite go there, Scott. I'm not the big summoner in big co-op player that you are, but I am starting to see the light.
I'm like an 80-20 split. Like, right. I'll give it a good go, and then after a while, like I learn the animations, I sort of look at, you know, what opportunities I have to dodge. If something feels a bit BS-y, a little bit from software, oh, it's a massive, like, something hit past me, and I just died on the spot, and I was like, oh, it's definitely still a From Software game. But at the same time, I was like, well, the game's going to dick you over at every opportunity, so I'm going to dick it over too. Like, I'll give it a chance or a damn good go, but after a while, it's just fun to summon in and have an actual fight where you're all, like, sharing aggro. And I love that energy of, like, the boss turns to you, and you're like, oh, my God, I've got to fend it off for a little bit. And you're, like, waiting for your mate to, like, or whoever it is, to throw in another ability, and then it turns around to them, and you get a few hits in. I just love that back and forth. I think that's really, really fun. I was going to touch on, but I think before we started recording, you mentioned potentially wanting to mention some nitpicks, but I don't know if you've touched on them anyway in terms of the torrent stuff.
Just minor things. Like, I think this game, like I said at the beginning, is immaculate, but there are some kind of like minor issues that I do kind of want to bring up. You know, you mentioned there's some of that FromSoft BS, and I noticed that in the castle, especially, you know, the castle compared to the open world, much tighter corridors, much more claustrophobic.
Weapons hitting off the wall, trying to hit something.
And that was kind of the thing. I kept a few times there were a few enemies with spears that would just hit me through the walls, and I was like, this is classic FromSoft. There are some times where enemies will kind of lock onto you in a seemingly unfair way, but it's just, it's very like kind of like minor things. And to be honest, the only reason I bring them up is because I think Bluepoint's Demon Souls has almost spoilt us in a way from what we should expect from software games in terms of polish. Because, you know, you look at Demon Souls and graphically that is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah,
technically, it is amazing. And you go to this, which, you know, hasn't unreal art style, like an art style that I love. Mm-hmm. But you do kind of have these technical issues of the frame rate, at least on PlayStation 5, not being as solid as I want it to be. And you've kind of like just got some of those technical limitations of, I know this game can't be compared to Demon's Souls because Demon's Souls is a PlayStation 5 exclusive built from the ground up to make the most of that machine. And this is releasing obviously on PS5, PS4, like five machines at a time.
No, but if we're talking UI issues or learning from past mistakes, I mean, there's stuff in here that was fixed in later Souls games that's now weird again. Like, you can't compare items when you're buying, or the AI is a bit naff. Or,
totally. Yeah. I think you mentioned before we started recording, you know, like doing backstab stealth attacks where you don't really know if it's an enemy that can take a stealth attack or whether it's going to be a critical hit or whether you're just going to hit them, and that kind of has to be a trial and error thing. Like, there was a mini boss that I stumbled across last night who kind of like walks towards a chest and you can go behind them, and I was like, I'm gonna wreck him, you know, right. It's gonna be great. And I went to do the stealth attack and it just like pinged off him. And I was like, oh no, I'm not prepared to deal with this fight after then. That. Yeah, it's just like very small things. I don't think it drags the game down too much, but obviously, you know, you're gonna be things to be aware of, things that could be patched out. I think that's why I bring them up, because it feels like fixable things, fixable issues.
Is, with all that stuff, I think it's intentional at this point. I think they want you to have a Dark Souls experience, and some of that comes with putting up with some weird glitchy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and it's weird. I don't fully think that it's right, but the design team saw this stuff. They must have done. Some of these devs have been working on these games for the last 10 years, and they know the complaints. They know the way they build the geomeshes of the world. They're allowing for these different weapons to go through parts of the environment. They know what they're doing. And I think some of it is to give you a cheap BS death, because that's Dark Souls. Like, I remember when Blighttown was going to get fixed. Obviously, the PC version was always fixed. But in the remaster, Blighttown Infamous Area in the original Dark Souls, literally 12 frames a second, if that, single digits for the most part. And I remember when that was getting remastered, and there was a lot of people just saying, well, it's not going to be Dark Souls then, because all the rest of us slogged through that area, and that's Dark Souls. And I was one of those people. Yeah. Like, if you're playing Dark Souls, you should play the original Dark Souls. That's Dark Souls.
No! Yeah. It's funny you mention, though, because even Bluepoint, who did the Demon's Souls remake, kind of mentioned that, and I think it was in the NoClip documentary where they're talking about, you know, they want to fix it up, but they don't want to fix it up to the point where you lose those quirks that made people crazy, so fond really, about it to begin with, which is crazy. For me, the only thing I do want to see improvements of is the frame rate, because every time I'm playing this, I'm almost thinking, like, I can't wait to play it again with a solid 60, and that's the only thing that's taken me out of the world. Everything else is pristine, but I am thinking that when it stutters a little bit, or where it kind of feels a little bit juddery, I'm thinking someone getting a full 60 on this, a solid 60 on this, is having the best version of
it. Oh yeah, I mean, the thing is, they've been on it, they patched it again on Sunday, but it was only to address the fact that the PS5 version was crashing, which that would be horrible if you're in the middle of one of those harder areas and you lose everything.
God, yeah.
But yeah, they patched that stuff out. I think they'll have a frame rate patch pretty soon. But yeah, for me, it's only been hitching a bit when you summon Torrent. Depends where you are when you do it, but for the most part, I mean, I'm on favor frame rate anyway, which is, according to Digital Foundry, it's between 45 and 60 is the overall bracket, whereas on favor quality, it can go between 30 and 45 or something. It's a little bit less. But overall, the vast majority of stuff totally lines up. It's a shame that people are having some performance issues, but you'd have to hope it gets fixed as soon as possible. But overall, yeah, Elden Ring, incredible. I think it lives up to the hype. I think it's like the most I've enjoyed a FromSoft game, like overall, maybe since the original Dark Souls. Like, I've got through Bloodborne, I got through Sekiro, and I like Sekiro, but there's something about this that feels like where things could have gone after the original Dark Souls, and there's a real special quality to that.
I'm excited to see where I come down in it, because I think I like those other games more than you. Like, for me, Bloodborne and Dark Souls are some of my favorite, like the original Dark Souls, are two of my favorite games of all time. Like, they'll be in the top 10. Like, I love Bloodborne to death, wouldn't talk about it all the time. Sekiro I love as well. You know, Dark Souls 3 is really good. So playing this, I know it's great, but I'm just interested to see when the dust has settled where I'm going to rank it within the pantheon of FromSoft games, because to me, like, they don't miss. Like, they are some of the highest quality developers that you can get, releasing some of the highest quality games, and this is one of those, but I'm excited to see if it tops the rest or comes close to top of the rest.
Honestly, like, you know, you are seeing, like, you, Josh, or anyone is seeing one of the greatest streaks in gaming history unfolding right now.
Yeah.
Like, they are on a form of their lives to the point where, like Rockstar were in the 2000s. Like, this is them writing gaming history. They'll fall off at some point, like, assumedly, but like, there's not an inch of what feels like studio interference in this. It feels like exactly what they wanted to make, and with some of the issues in there, some of the glitches and stuff in terms of, you know, geomesh stuff or whatever, but it feels uncompromising, and I love that about it. I love that they're just like, they're just going full bore, doing the right kind of thing for what they want to do on a creative aspect. And you see so little of that at this level. Death Stranding was one of the last times that we saw that.
Yeah.
And so it's just fascinating on that level too. But yeah, I drink it in. But yeah, so we'll do another podcast on Wednesday. I'm going to get Jules in because he's been living on it as well. He's put about 20 hours in and he's already beat one boss. So he's been off gallivanting to the east and the south. But yeah, for now, it's been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Telford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.